podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, May 16th, 2020. This is episode 1695. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Whether they're working in the office or remotely, visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LinkedIn Learning. A lot of things are changing in our professional lives. With over 16,000 courses taught by industry experts, LinkedIn Learning is where you can get the skills that can help you and your career. Keep learning to rise to any moment, and you could try 1 month free right now at linkedinlearning.com/techguy. And by LastPass. Prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass. Trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to find out how they can help you. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Let me just sanitize, take off my mask, my protective glasses, my helmet, and say hello. It's time to talk high tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. We got all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it, I'd love to talk about it. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call me. You'll have to use Skype out to reach me. 888-827-5536. Hello. Did you have a good week? Stay safe? Good. Facebook and... Okay, now how do I pronounce it? Jiffy or Giphy? Jiffy, because it's like Jiffy Pop, right? Or in a Jiffy. G-I-P-H-Y. You know Jiffy? You might even, if you're a Facebook user, you might even think it's, you know, like it's part of Facebook. Because whenever you type something in Messenger or on Facebook and you could search with your keyboard, you can search for an animated GIF to go along with it, right? That's a company actually called Giphy. I'll come on and call it Giphy. Giphy. Facebook is buying it. They announced it on yesterday. They're going to buy it. What do you think Giphy is worth? What do you think it's worth? Maybe. All right, before you tell me a number, might also mention that Giphy is widely used on Twitter. It's widely used on Slack. If you use Slack for business, we do. I actually had to yell at people the other day saying, no more animated GIFs in the general channel. I'm trying to read here, and that's Giphy. That's also Giphy. Signal, even the super secret, top secret encrypted messaging, uses Giphy because you can instantly find the perfect GIF to represent the moment. Right across all the platforms, and there are many more. Giphy has 300 million active users every single day. Now, how much would you pay? I don't know if Giphy has... you don't see ads in Giphy. Maybe they make a little money. I suppose they could make a little money by doing custom GIFs. You know, the new movies coming out. Oh, look. Now we've got Iron Man GIFs. I suppose they make a little money on that. But what do you think Giphy's real value is? They get every single keystroke you type when you're using that keyboard. Every single GIF you search for, Giphy sees. They get something even more valuable than advertising money these days. They get data. Now, how much would you pay? How about, this is what Facebook paid for Giphy, $400 million. Yikes. That's the reported amount. We don't know the, you know, they didn't say exactly how much, but that's the reported amount. $400 million. Facebook said, because we're very excited. So they got to give you a reason, right, to spend that much money for a Yiffy. So they, the reason? We're going to integrate this into Instagram. Won't that be amazing? No. I don't know. I'm not against animated GIFs. I think they have their place. You know, the perfect use of an animated GIF in a tweet. Do you put them in your emails? Please don't if you do. That's terrible. But in a tweet, or maybe, you know, you're in a good conversation with somebody on Messenger and you put it right there. Yes, it's on Apple's Messenger as well. You do that and that's good. Oh, that's good. That was the le mot juste, the gif de juste, the perfect animated yif. I'm going to call them yifs. Just add a protest to this whole gif gif thing. They're yifs. I think they're wonderful, but 300 million active users a day. Wow, that's a lot. But $400 million, why are they worth $400 million to Facebook? We might want to think about that. What it does mean is that, you know, of course, about half the Jiffy use is in Facebook. So they already know about half of what's going on. Now they'll know everything that's going on, not just on Facebook, but on Twitter and Signal and Slack and other places, too. Apple's messages, that's pretty valuable. In fact, I think they got a deal. Now, if you're a crazy privacy advocate, you might say, oh, yay, yay. But you wouldn't be using Yiffy anyway, would you? Would you? You'd be using something else, I would hope, because you're just giving away all that information about, I don't know, how valuable is that? Well, $400 million worth, about all the animated GIFs. There's probably other stuff, too. It's really valuable to be a thing that's used frequently on somebody's phone. That's got a lot of value. When you first set up Jiffy, does it ask for location permissions? I bet it does. I bet it does. So maybe it knows that information. So you may be using a privacy browser. You may block fingerprinting. You may turn off third-party cookies. But if you're sending funny images to friends, ooh, you are now part of the Facebook ecosystem. Just to give you an idea, by the way, of how valuable this information is, Congress just passed a reenactment, or what do they call it? The Patriot Act. They reauthorized the Patriot Act, which we passed back after 9/11 to help fight terrorism. That's almost 20 years. Every few years, they got to reauthorize it. Reauthorized it. You may remember Edward Snowden revealed that the Patriot Act allowed for the bulk collection of data on millions of phone calls. The House passed the reauthorization. Senate was considering some privacy-focused amendments. The ACLU and others encouraged Congress to add three specific amendments that would help a little bit with our privacy. You know what the big one is? By the way, it failed, so it's now part of the Patriot Act. Your browser history. Your browser history. It was a little movement, which would have been fun. A petition to say, Mitch McConnell, if you don't think our browser history is that important, would you give us yours, please? Let's see yours. Yeah, I don't think we're going to see his browser history. Your browser history says a lot about you. The amendment from Steve Daines and Ron Wyden would have prohibited the warrantless collection of search or browser histories. The Senate failed to pass this, coming up one vote short. Ben Sasse, Bernie Sanders not voting. Patty Murray, senator from Washington State, who would have supported it, was en route, couldn't get back in time. So, had one more vote, it would have passed. But now, Now the federal government will have the right without a warrant. And this is important. Law enforcement will have a right without a warrant to get your browsing history. Where do they get it? Well, they can ask a lot of people. They can ask your computer company. They can ask your browser. They most likely will ask your internet service provider. They see everything you do, right? They know your whole browsing history, every site you go to. And they don't have to tell you. They don't have to. You don't have to know. There's no warrant. They can just not go, hey, you know, what's Leo been looking at lately? What is he? We're curious. Well, there you have it. You can't use Jiffy. And you can't use a browser. You could use a browser, actually. This is now a real strong argument for using a virtual private network, a VPN, or other browser technology to hide what your searches include from your internet service provider. Use a browser that respects your privacy, has a strong privacy policy. That would be good, too. Ideally, they don't collect it at all, right? Because if they collect it, the law enforcement can come without a warrant and get it. They can't say no. So ideally, just, you know, use stuff that doesn't collect information about you. 8888-ASK-LEO. There's a couple of things we can talk about. The new Pixel Buds, the Surface Buds have arrived, as have the Pixel Buds. These new Bluetooth earbuds, because Apple and Google have the courage not to put headphone jacks on their phones. We now have to use these wireless headphones that work sort of. What do you think? I can give you some reviews. I'll tell you which ones to get. I'll give you a preview. Don't get the most expensive ones. Save your money. Get the less expensive ones, okay? I wonder if they're listening to what I'm listening to. Mr. LaPorte, is it true that on the day of August 15th, 2017, you were listening to Rachmaninoff? Yes or no?
Yes, sir. Yes, I was.
It's a miracle! Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy.
Good morning.
Still feeling well?
Yeah.
I have one of those oven. I don't know if this works. You know, the no-touch oven thermometers with the laser that you test your pizza oven with? I wonder if you could take people's temperatures with that thing. Oh, my God, you're 525 degrees. Just right. Ready for the pizza.
Yeah.
So we don't, you know, you're in a different area from me. But we do walk down the same hall.
We walk down the same
hall. Don't breathe when you walk down that hall,
okay? No, I hold my breath the whole time. And then when I'm going down and making a cup of coffee, I test all those skills that I built up swimming, you know, going underneath.
Yeah, well, I don't go out there to the coffee machine anymore. That's dangerous. But I'm very proud to say you wore your mask. I saw that. And I see that Jeff, our studio engineer, is wearing his mask.
Yes.
And I wore my mask. So we look like
in the hallways,
the masked Avengers, but we're here. We're here and we're safe.
We are, I think.
You've been answering?
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I mean,
I feel pretty good. We're not, you know, we're not going to have a bunch of people in for drinks later or anything.
No.
We're going to keep the company swimming pool closed. The water park is not.
That part I'm bummed about.
I know. I know. We had just finished the Twit Lazy River. And we were so excited about opening that up as it gets hotter and the weather's beautiful. But no, we're not going to do that.
Well, not yesterday, but last Friday, it was 97 degrees. I wanted my pool.
I know. I know.
Oh, well.
Well, we're just going to have to put off the Tech Guy Water Park, and we'll do that another time. Who should I talk to first?
Let's talk to Hawaii Cop, who is not in Hawaii, but I think that's what you know him as.
Uh-oh.
No. Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
I'm looking down here. I think I have to reboot my phone.
Shoot.
Oh, how do I do that?
I don't know that you can. I think that's something that has to be done
in the
back.
What if I just pull this plug here?
Well, you can try it. All the deferred maintenance going out at one time.
The studio's falling apart. We can't, and I won't let anybody in here. Okay. Now, do you ever do this when they say reboot your stuff? It says wait 10 seconds before you plug it back in.
Yeah, I do that with my router at home all the time.
I don't know if that makes any difference.
Oh, nice mustache.
Yeah, I don't know why my phone has a mustache on it. Okay, I just plugged it back in now. It's going to go through the boot
cycle through
process.
Probably blink a few times.
It's blank now. Oh, it says loading.
Loading.
Isn't it funny when you see loading on a phone? 20, 46%, 51%. Telos VX. It's loading.
It is weird because I grew up with a rotary phone.
I didn't have to boot or anything.
I didn't have to boot my phone.
And unplugging it didn't do anything. Okay, it's 100% loaded now. Oh, look at that. It worked.
Oh, cool.
Is he on line one?
Line one, yes.
Hawaii cop, my friend Stan. Hello, Stan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, let me take my mask off. Okay, how about you? How you doing?
Hey, are you in Hawaii?
No, I'm up here in Stacy country. I'm about 30 miles south of Stacy in Belfair.
Nice. Very pretty up there.
Yeah. I wanted to bring you up to date on some things.
Okay.
You know, we talked about Tableau over the air about a year ago, and you were going to check it out, but what's happened?
Well, I can't check anything out here because, as I mentioned at the time, I'm so far away from the big city that unless I put an antenna on the roof, and my wife won't let me do that.
Yes.
There's no way I'm getting...
Because you're in a good area.
Yeah.
Actually, you are. I'm 35 miles from Seattle through hills and trees and everything.
And can you get it? Does it work?
Oh, perfect. Yeah. You know what? It's really funny. A neighbor of mine who's totally non-tech, he thought about it, and he went to YouTube, and he saw a YouTube thing, and it worked. And I said, but I'm a tech guy over here. he said, it works. So I did it, and it works.
Nice. That's good to know.
I started off at Channel Master, but they've kind of gone down the chutes.
Have they? Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah,
I should mention that what you're talking about is DVRs, recorders that work with the over-the-air signal, the antenna signal.
Air.
The way the TiVo used to be in the good old days.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Tableau now. Tableau is, it'll record four shows at the same time. You can do ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox.
That means it has four tuners, which is nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the commercial skip is working perfectly now.
Wow. I love commercial skip. But don't you ever use it on my show.
No. The commercial skip is done within the box. So you record the show, and about an hour later, all the commercials are gone.
Oh, you don't even have to push a button. It just deletes them.
It's automatic. It's part of the service. It runs $20 a year.
How do they get away with that? Wow.
And their channel guide is just absolutely perfect.
Now, do you pay a monthly fee for that, or is the $20 cover that too?
$20 a year.
That's a good deal.
And $5 for their cable service, menu service. And it works like a channel. What I want to tell you about is, you know, we used to use TV Fool, right?
Yep.
Well, there's a new app out. It's called Antenna Point. Write that down, Antenna Point.
And you
take your iPhone and you stand out in your driveway and turn on Antenna Point, and it points directly at the channels and how far away they are.
Oh, that's cool. And that's an app. That's really cool.
Oh, it really is. And it shows the antennas, and your antennas are down in San Francisco.
That's awesome. Well, I got to run. We got coming up Scott Wilkinson, home theater guy. But thanks for the update. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk TV and home theater with our home theater guru, Scott Wilkins. Scott, did you do something to my audio?
Yeah.
Scott is our home theater geek, contributor at techhive.com, joins us every week to talk about home theater. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Are you
on the cable or no?
Actually, I'm on satellite.
Satellite. But I think a lot of people, cord cutters, we call them, who don't want to pay for the cable, are very interested in over-the-air stuff. And as Hawaii cop Stan told us, this Antenna Point app looks pretty cool. You just put it on your phone.
I hadn't heard of that before. I'm going to definitely get that and check it out. Because I do have OTA as well, over-the-air OTA. And I have an antenna on my roof. I understand maybe you have a little harder time.
Oh, we're pretty far away from
anything.
I can get channel 50.
Well, I'm in LA, and I you know, I have a good clear view of Mount Wilson where all the transmitters are. So
yeah.
You know, I've got an antenna on my roof, and it's even got a rotor on it. I can
Those are the old school.
Yeah, I can rotate it so that it points. And now with this antenna point app, which I just learned about on your show, thank you very much. I should be able to optimize the direction it's pointing in. With some of the wind we've had, it kind of got mispointed. So I got to redirect it.
And it still works with it now that we've gone digital, because that's probably from the analog days. But it probably still works.
Oh yeah, well yeah. Enough. No, you still need to point it in the right direction, roughly. Yeah, exactly. So apps, you know, are an important thing in home theater. This antenna point is one. I got an email from Andrew in Duluth, who was looking for an app for a phone that would let him set up his TV. We've talked about this in the past, where you have five basic controls in virtually all televisions. They're called brightness, contrast, color, tint, and sharpness. And usually I recommend a Blu-ray disc or something like that, because you have to show certain test patterns on the screen in order to set those controls properly. But this guy, Andrew, wanted to know, can I do it from an app? Do I really need a Blu-ray? And the answer is no, you can do it from an app. THX offers one. It's been available for a couple of years now, called THX Tune-Up. And it's super cool, actually. I've used it, and it's really great. You have to – it actually generates its own test patterns from the phone. It's available in iOS or Android, and it generates its test patterns from the phone. And you think, well, wait a second. You got to get those test patterns over to the TV. And you can do it one of three ways. You can either – get an HDMI adapter. So on an iPhone, you'd need a Lightning to HDMI adapter, and that would cost you something. And then an HDMI cable over to your TV. Better is to use either an Apple TV or a Chromecast. Mm. It can wirelessly send these signals, these test patterns, to the Apple TV or the Chromecast, which is presumably already connected up to your TV by HDMI. So that's how you get – that's the better way, in my opinion, to get the signal over to the TV. And it has step-by-step instructions of how to connect it. It lets you specify what your display is. And then it gives you picture adjustments and even some sound adjustments, which are pretty cool too. Sound adjustments are really only – do you have the speakers in the right locations? Do you have them connected upright? Is the left speaker really the left speaker, and the right, and the center, and so on? And do you have them connected up in the right phase? Those are the only two tests in this. But this app is really meant more for picture adjustments. You can, for example, make sure that your aspect ratio is set correctly. Have you ever seen you've gone into somebody's house and their TV is set up in such a way that people look fat? Right, that they kind of look distorted, kind of stretched in the horizontal direction. They don't have their aspect ratio on their TV set correctly.
They got a big aspect. I understand.
They got a big aspect. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can set that up properly. You can then the most important one, in my opinion, is the one called brightness, which sets the what we call the black level, or where the black level of the TV is. If you set that too high, the TV looks washed out and kind of wimpy, and it doesn't pop. The image doesn't pop. If you set it too low, you get your low-level details, things in the shadows. You know, as you're waiting for the bad guy to pop out of the shadows, you can't see anything. It's all just a blur or a blob, a black blob. So you have to set that properly in order to get the best possible picture. I think it's the most important setting in your TV. And with this THX tune-up app, you do that. You set that. You set the contrast, which establishes the white point, the highest white that you can reach. And then the color and tint, which you normally don't have to set. I want to make this point very clear. Modern TVs, the color control is really the saturation. And if you set it too saturated, it looks pretty cartoony. And grass looks like it's fluorescing. And you really don't want that. If you set it too low, then everything looks, again, very dull. You can set it to the point where you have black and white. You have no color at all. So you want to set that properly. But most TVs, out of the box, the color control is set properly. Same with tint. Tint, if you played with the tint control at all, you know that it kind of goes from magenta to green. And so people can either look too sunburned or they can look sick. And you want that to be properly set. But again, this is an interesting thing about digital televisions. In the old days, in analog TVs, CRTs, you remember CRTs? That control could be set improperly and you would need to adjust it. But with digital TVs, it's essentially perfect out of the box. You normally don't have to play with it. Now, the one control that they, or the one test pattern that this app doesn't have, and I would recommend that they add it, and being an app, it should be easy, right?
Yeah.
Is sharpness. And most TVs, when you get them out of the box, the sharpness control adjusts whether or not there's any edge enhancement or digital signal processing on the signal so that edges, sharp edges between one color and another or between a bright thing and a dark thing, are they well defined? Well, if you crank that too much, they actually get a little halo around them. This is called ringing, technically. And most TVs, the sharpness is set too high. So one of the first things I do when I look at a new TV is get the sharpness down to zero or close to zero. And that's usually the best setting. Sometimes when you set it to actual zero, it softens the picture. And you don't want that. So what I typically do is go down to zero and then inch it up, you know, click it up one tick at a time, another tick at a time. What if it gets a little sharper? Great. And then I move it up to the point where I start seeing these halos around sharp edges. And really looking at a test pattern, a particular type of test pattern, it makes that easier to see. And then I back it off until I don't see those anymore. I wish this app had that one thing is the one thing I would wish it has. But
now, how much is this app and what's its name?
It's free.
It's free.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Just download it from THX. It's called THX Tune-Up.
And is it iOS and Android?
And Android.
You don't actually get it from THX. You get it from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. But if you search for THX TuneUp, and then I see there's an iPad version, which would be very handy.
Right.
I don't have to look at a shrunken picture on the screen.
Exactly, yes.
Now, you're a professional calibrator. You're putting yourself out of business, dude. I guess you're not being called to a lot of houses right now.
I'm not being called to a lot of houses these days. No, that's absolutely true.
So do this, and then later call Scott and get him to come
over
and check your work. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson. TechHive.com. That's good. That's a really nice tool.
It's a really nice tool. I like it a lot. Now, you know, how can they do that for free? Well, they part of the app, the controls along the bottom, the tabs, are you can watch THX trailers and so on.
Well, that's not
and then
bad.
They,
I don't mind that.
And then they give you a link to a place where you can search for products that are THX certified.
Cool.
So, you know, I don't find that egregious at all.
No, not at all. Nor do I.
They're trying to help people get the best they can. That's their whole mission, is to help people have the best possible entertainment experience they can. That was their mission in digital cinemas, in movie theaters. When we get back to movie theaters, that will still be their mission. And it's their mission at home.
Started by George Lucas?
Actually, yes, it was. It was in the 80s.
Right, but he doesn't own it.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
No, he started it in the 80s, and one of the principal founders was a guy named Tomlinson Holman.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
Tom Holman?
Yeah.
In fact, he's the TH in THX.
Who's the X?
That there is some debate about that. It could either stand for experiment or crossover.
Now, remember, George's first movie, his college movie, was THX 1138. So
correct. So, and there, so THX might have come from
might
that.
Just be, hey, we got Tomlinson Holman, and let's just call it THX.
Yeah, exactly. But Tom Holman is, you know, he's an audio genius. He was, in fact, what is it, almost 10 years ago now, my very first guest on my podcast.
Right, I remember. Theater Geek. Yep.
And that was very cool.
Yeah, cool.
But he now works for Apple, and he won't talk to the press at all.
No, of course not. James says that the Lucasfilm sold THX to Razer. Wow.
Oh, is that? Yeah, now I seem to recall something about that. Yeah.
Wow, that's an interesting.
I thought they were kind of an independent
business
organization. Yeah. They're in San Francisco, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Or they were, anyway. They were in Marin, and I think they moved down into the city.
Interesting. I guess they make money, I don't know, labeling computers THX, because Razer's, you know, they're a computer hardware company.
Right.
So
right. They make money certifying products.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's
I mean,
why we see all these THX computers and all of a sudden all these Dolby phones and all this crap.
Yeah. They make
big, big bucks, even though there's no way that's a THX speaker or a Dolby speaker.
Right. Although, interestingly, THX did develop an amplifier technology called AAA, something achromatic amplifier.
Hmm.
And they sold it, or they licensed it to a couple of companies. I'm trying to remember who now. Maybe somebody in the chat room will remember. And I've heard it, and it's wonderfully low noise. I mean, it's like crystal clear.
Ooh, that's cool.
It's really
Is that
cool.
used in THX theaters, or it's just a side?
No. Benchmark was, I believe, the name of the company. And they have versions of it on chips. Basically, it's an integrated circuit that you can put into higher end amps or portable products.
Oh, so George originally sold it to Creative, and then Creative sold it to Razer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Let's get back to the calls. Chad is on the line from Albertville, Alabama. Hello, Chad.
Leo, how are you today, my friend?
Fantastic.
Good. Well, I've got a real quick question for you.
Yes, sir.
And I've got a short tidbit of a story for you, real small, but I'll ask the question first. So so what I'm doing is I run the streaming computer at the church, and the current setup is a Dell computer. I'm not sure the exact model, but it's got 16 gigs of memory. It's got an i7, and it's got a Radeon 7700.
It's a decent computer.
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. So the setup currently is it's two projectors and two monitors, and the monitors are in the sound booth. What I need to do is run the streaming software on one, capture the display of the other monitor that is in the back, but then duplicate the captured monitor to the two projectors for when we start to do worship service, because they've taken the hymnals up and everything else.
Right.
So for the folks at home to be able to see the lyrics, they need to be able to see the display.
Yes.
And I've been able to get the two projectors to duplicate, but I can't get my third monitor to be with them, if that makes sense.
What software are you using, just out of curiosity? We have a lot of people asking about how to do this right now.
Yeah, we're using Streamlabs OBS.
Oh, really? Okay. You're not using dedicated worship software. You're using OBS, which is used by a ton of people to stream video games on Twitch and places
like
that.
Right. Well, see, I used to be a Twitcher, so
your OBS. Yeah.
Right. And it allows me to do multi-stream, where the regular OBS software wouldn't allow the multi-stream.
So, normally, you have an interesting setup. Normally, what I would say is, well, you just think of it as a computer with multiple screens. You have to have sufficient hardware, and maybe the 7700 isn't, to drive that many different screens, the projectors and the local screen. But it sounds like you're streaming. Is that right? Are you streaming You're streaming, of course, to the home audience, but are you streaming to any of the screens as well? No.
Are the no.
No, the screens are driven directly by the computer.
Correct.
So if I boil it down, your question really is, how can I stream to these multiple screens? How can I have the content of my computer be on these multiple screens, right? Or no?
Correct. Yes, but without taking away, see, we're running it through PowerPoint.
Right.
So on the two screens that I have in the control booth, one of them runs the software all the time. It shows the software. And the other one would be to have the PowerPoint on.
Yeah, and PowerPoint will let you say, I'm going to display my presentation on a secondary screen, and I'm going to see my presenter notes or the program itself on a primary screen.
Right.
And then you're really, OBS is just adding a virtual screen, which is the stream. So it sounds like maybe your question is a PowerPoint question. You'd like to have PowerPoint display the lyrics on all the screens at once. Is that right?
Correct. Other than my control software for Streamlabs.
Yeah. So you have your computer, and that presumably is going to be the computer screen. So the computer screen will have Streamlabs on it. It'll have PowerPoint on it. You'll put PowerPoint in the mode where it's got presenter mode for you. You know, you can see the PowerPoint, and it's got the actual presentation on all the other screens. Where is the problem showing up?
The problem is if I put it on the other screen in the control booth, the other two screens, the projector screens, don't see the... They won't see it.
They can't see it. PowerPoint maybe will only put it out on a second screen rather than multiple screens. That's an interesting question. I mean, there's another way to do it would be to output to a single screen and then split that screen. You'd probably want to get some hardware so that you get a decent signal to the other screens. But I don't think it would be an expensive piece of hardware. So then you'd only really have two screens. And I don't know, and maybe somebody listening does, because, you know, typically you'll go and you're going to give a speech. You'll have your laptop in front of you. You say to PowerPoint, put the speech up on the big screen behind me, but put your software with the speaker notes and everything in front of me. PowerPoint has the ability to do that. But it won't do it to multiple screens. Now, I've seen plenty of speeches where they have the presentation on many, many screens. So I don't know if there's a switch in PowerPoint to do that or if they're using something like a matrix splitter. I think that's probably what they're doing. And those aren't...
I've considered doing that.
Yeah, those aren't expensive. So you essentially would output to one matrix splitter and have it then split it out to the multiple screens.
Okay.
It's a good question because in theory, PowerPoint, if the computer can drive all those screens, it sounds like it can, right?
It's done it before.
Yeah. Then it would be, I think, just a setting in PowerPoint to say, look, can you say to PowerPoint, show it, mirror all the screens and it works?
I don't know. I haven't tried that.
So if it can do that, then you should. Then I would think, and I, you know, this is really more a gap in my knowledge of PowerPoint. I've never done it this way. I would think you could say to PowerPoint, "Okay, this is my primary display. Put the speaker notes and the program and everything up there, and then display the presentation on every other screen."
Okay.
So if it can't, then you need a hardware matrix splitter, and that's not an expensive device.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to give that a try. I'll look into that.
And if somebody knows, let me know. Now, what was the story you wanted to tell?
Okay. So I work for a pest control company, and I was out at a customer's house, and they had an old TV in their attic. And got to talking to them about it, and they're like, hey, we're actually going to throw that away. It's about a year and a half old, and it's an LG 55-inch 4K smart TV. I said, really? And she goes, what happened to it? She says, well, the power went off and it stopped working. She says, you're more than welcome to take it with you.
I said, okay. Nice.
Right. So I took it home, plugged it up, and I had sound but no image. So I take the back panel off of this, and I'm looking around, and I see the TCON board, and it's got a big old fat burnt chip on it. I get on eBay, find the replacement.
What?
The TCON board for $10.
Wow.
And me and my wife now have a 55-inch 4K smart TV.
Wow. You know, usually I think of those as no user serviceable parts inside, but you're obviously very adept. It wasn't surface mounted. It was just a board plugged in. You could just replace it.
I just replaced the entire board for $10.
Beauty. Well done.
That's awesome.
I'm looking, while you were telling the story, I went to office.com, present on multiple monitors and view speaker notes privately. It says in PowerPoint you could present with two monitors. Doesn't mention more than two monitors. So if you go into the slideshow tab in the monitors group, you can select user presenter view. That's the one where you'll have a view and they'll have the view of the thing. It doesn't, it's unclear whether you, how many monitors you can have. I bet you that's a limitation in PowerPoint. So
I would just need to do a splitter then.
I think a splitter is going to be the way to do it. Yeah. But if anybody knows, somebody listening, set up one of these big, you know, presentations. If you set up TED, one of the TED conferences, because you'll see that all the time. The presenter has in front of them a screen with their slides. There's a screen behind them with slides. And if the big room is big enough, there might be multiple screens with slides. I bet you they do that with a matrix splitter. Come to think about it. I bet you that's how they do it. Nice to talk to you and score, Chad, on that LG. That's fantastic. That's awesome. You know, what is it they say? One person's junk is another person's treasure. If that person happens to know a little bit about electronics, maybe. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I miss the alliteration. One man's trash is another man's treasure. Scott Wilkinsonian.
Woohoo!
I give you the con.
Thank you so much. Hello, everybody. So nice to see you all. There we go. Yeah, we've been talking in the chat room about AV receivers. Jim Four asked me what I used. I have a Denon. AVR X6200W. And I generally recommend Denon and Marantz and Yamaha. Those are my three top brands. And Twisted Mister tends to agree. He says never had a Yamaha component die. My very first receiver was a Yamaha, two-channel stereo receiver. That was my first real audio system back in probably early college. And it sounded great, and I've loved Yamaha equipment ever since and had very good success with it. Pioneer and Onkyo, we were talking about the fact that Onkyo bought the home consumer electronics division of Pioneer, and now Pioneer and Onkyo receivers are under the same corporate umbrella. And it looked for a while like Sound United, which is the corporate umbrella that includes Denon and Marantz, was going to try and acquire those as well, but the deal fell through. So they didn't. Twisted Mister says, I sold a couple of Onkyo and Pioneer receivers, all failed pretty quickly. Never seen a Yamaha component die. Exactly. Mike B says, I'm now in sync. And I wasn't apparently when I was on the air. So who knows? Doesn't matter that much because it's radio. Let's see here. Anybody else got any questions for me? Yes, I was out of sync. I know. Sorry about that. But you know, in this world of technology, let's see. Oh, MacBookie was asking about the new Sonos Arc soundbar. That's kind of interesting. I was talking a couple weeks ago that I had reviewed the Sennheiser, Ambio soundbar, which has Atmos, interestingly, because it has up firing speakers. And MacBookie was asking me about the Sonos Arc, which also has that, and asked, can that be? And the answer is yes, it can. As long as you have a flat reflective ceiling, the soundbar will have up-firing speakers They will shoot the overhead sound, the Atmos overhead channels, up to the ceiling, and that'll reflect back down and into the listening area, and it'll sound like it's coming from overhead if the up-firing speakers are designed well. And that's the key, because you can't have – they have to be pretty directional. They have to fire the sound up. They can't fire the sound in a wide hemispherical sound field, because you're going to get some direct sound leaking out of the side of the speaker, and you're going to hear it directly from the sound bar as well as from overhead, and that's going to interfere with the illusion of it coming from overhead. So in a well-designed up-firing speaker, and there are many on the market now, not only from sound bars but also from companies that make separate speaker systems. You take a what's called an overhead or an elevation speaker, you stick it on top of the speaker that's on the floor, and it fires upward just like these sound bars. If they're designed well, they don't leak a lot of sound from the sides. They only shoot up, and what you hear is coming down. Now, that only works, as I said before, if you have a flat ceiling that's fairly reflective, so drywall. You don't want, acoustic tiles up there, because that'll absorb too much of the sound. You don't want a cathedral ceiling or a vaulted ceiling or in a mid-century modern house, a ceiling that, you know, is just a ramp that goes up. I've seen plenty of those, like in Palm Springs, say, and stuff like that. Those won't work with these up-firing speakers. They won't reflect the sound back down into the listening area. So they're somewhat limited in that regard. You have to have the right kind of ceiling. So that's kind of interesting, though. I hope to get a chance to listen to that Sonos Arc at some point. I think that would be fun. Beatmaster, which upcoming movie would be the one that makes you consider returning to the theater? Ooh, that's a really good question. I'm not sure I'm going to return to the theater until there's a vaccine, regardless of the movie. But if I had to choose one, Tenet looks awfully interesting. Christopher Nolan's upcoming movie, which there's very little detail about, which makes it all the more intriguing. There's a time travel element to it, which I always love, a time travel element. That's one of my favorite plot devices. Christopher Nolan movies are great. I was not that impressed with Interstellar, to tell you the truth. I know that's sacrilege, but it's what it is. I did think, regarding Interstellar, I'll say something here about Interstellar. I thought the first act, that is the part where they're on the Earth, we don't know exactly what time period we're talking about, but I figured it out to be roughly 50 years from now. And in 50 years, I think that how Christopher Nolan depicted the Earth was pretty spot on and really scary. That was a very plausible scenario.
A dust bowl
where food is difficult to come by. Most yeah. crops are blighted. You know, corn is the only thing that grows anymore. now the part about the aliens and I don't want to give too much away here, but the wormhole and the black hole and all that kind of stuff, I didn't find that very plausible at all.
I like that stuff, but
okay, well, that's fine. Yeah. But Christopher Nolan can do some very interesting things. And this movie Tenet is tempting to me. And he wants it to come back into the theaters in July. He's very clear about that.
Yeah,
and I'm going,
luck.
Yeah, right.
Good luck.
Would it tempt me to go back to the theater? Probably not.
No.
Not until there's a vaccine.
Yeah.
Sorry. What are my thoughts on releasing direct to streaming instead of theaters? I'm all for it. I think that's a great thing. That's what I would hope things are going to change even after we have a vaccine. I mean, some theaters are going to go under before that happens. AMC has already filed for bankruptcy. Will they emerge from it? I don't know. That would be really sad, because that's where Dolby Cinema is, and that's what I used to love to go to.
Scott, have a good week. Stay safe. Stay
Thank
healthy.
You. I will. You too.
Wear your mask.
Good job on the mask. By the way, I really like how it goes down over your chin.
Yeah, these are, and this is my new design, which I kind of like because it has silk on the inside.
Yeah, yeah, I like
that. So it's dual layer.
Yeah.
And it's very comfortable, very breathable. I hope it works.
Yeah, excellent, excellent.
I'll let you know if it works.
See you next week.
Take care.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, IoT, Internet of Things. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's my phone number. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. James is writing, James DeRuvo is writing down everything we talk about, putting all the links up there on the website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. If you would like, you know, if you have a question or you want to make a comment, you could, of course, call 8888-ASK-LEO. But if you are listening later or whatever, you can also put it up on the website. And there's no sign up there. There's no requirement to pay any money or anything. It's like the old days. Just a website with stuff on it and a search. TechGuyLabs.com. Line two, Michael, Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Leo. Good to be talking to you today.
Thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, not a problem. All right, I'm going to try and get through the story real quick.
Okay.
Went to put a new hard drive in my laptop, went from 750 gig up to a 1 terabyte, but had to change the BIOS in order to get the 1 terabyte to be read by the laptop. So now, all of a sudden, I wanted to take everything from the old hard drive and just bridge it to the laptop to copy everything over. Well, now the old hard drive can't be read.
Oh, so you're kidding. What did you do in the BIOS so you could read the new hard drive?
I don't know. Anyhow, I ended up, because it wouldn't be read by anything. So now I had to do a quick format so that it could be read by Recova, and now I recovered, and it's not recovering as much as I want it to. I've got XPS files. I think it's XPS files that I really need, that it's not XPS documents that are not being read. And I'd really like to find a way to get the file category. You know, not just the actual files themselves, but what folders they were in. I mean, I don't mind paying for a service that'll do that. I just don't want to pay for something and then, oh, well, sorry, we can't do this, or you need a bigger, newer, flashier program for this. Or am I basically lost at this point?
I wish you'd called me before you went out to quick format and recover it, because all you really needed to do was get a little $35 dongle that would turn it into a USB drive, and you could have plugged it in. And as long as the drive itself isn't damaged.
Well, that's the thing. I have something that plugs in, as that's how I was going to copy from one to the
right.
other. But for some reason,
didn't read it.
I plugged it into I even installed it into a another computer just to see, and it said, sorry, you need to format this.
Oh, that drive somehow died when you took it out, I guess. Mm. It was working fine when you until you did this. You heard its feelings, and it said, I'm sorry, you've retired me. You hurt the drive. Yeah, so I guess I understand now why you did recover. Recover is a nice utility, but most of these recovery utilities, all they really do is they look for files, and if they can see all the sectors, they'll put them together again. I don't know if it can or will rebuild. What you need to see the folders is the catalogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now the XPS files, you can't read those either, huh?
No, it found the XPS files, but every time I try to open one up, it says, sorry, it can't open.
You hadn't turned on BitLocker or anything like that, had you? You had been using encryption?
No.
No. Okay.
So I'm not that technologically.
Huh. It could just be, well, maybe the hard drive is a goner. There are certainly hard drive recovery companies. They specialize in doing that. Generally, there's all sorts of ways hard drives can die. This one sounds like it just got flaky on you.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a company's not going to do any better than the software you're using is going to do. But if you really need it desperately, you can go to companies like Drive Savers, Novato, California. There's all sorts of them all over the country. And generally, the way these guys work is if your hard drive is dead, like bearings froze up or the head got bent or the drive got scratched, where you have a hardware issue. And the reason they charge thousands of dollars to recover those is they have the parts for all the different manufacturers. They also have a clean room where the guys wear bunny suits. In fact, I could use one of those today. They wear the bunny suits in there, and there's no dust because they're going to open up the drive, take a look at its any physical damage, and replace it.
They rebuild it.
But that doesn't sound like what's going on with your drive. It sounds like it's purely software because Recover was able to get a lot of it back.
Right. It's odd how it pieces it all back together because it says, here's an Excel file with the name, but you try to open it up and it doesn't open. But then here's another Excel file that's of the same size with this weird name, and you open it up, and there's my information, and
right.
I have to save it as something else. So
yeah. It's just exposing the dirty little secrets hidden in your hard drive, which are that, you know, sometimes there's a backup. Maybe that one worked. It does sound like you had hard drive damage. It sounds like the sectors, and it could be physical. It could be just, you know, a soft damage, a physical damage, like a scratch on the disk. They're not going to do any better than you would do. If it's software damage, in other words, a bunch of zeros and ones got written kind of in a diagonal across the drive or some critical, you know what I'm saying, some critical bits got flipped. Again, they're not going to be able to do any better because they don't somehow see better onto the drive than you do. Their real skill is in repairing a drive as opposed to doing the software stuff.
Right.
So,
but there's no other software comparable to like a Recover.
They all work pretty much the same way. I don't have a recommendation. In fact, I usually recommend Recover. Which is spelled RECUVA from Seat Cleaner. Seat Cleaner is a pretty good company. Let me ask the chat room if there's a program you guys like better than Recover. They all work roughly the same, which is they look for, because you can lose the catalog. The file allocation table can be gone. But you can then scan the disk. Did it take a while to find these files? It kind of churned along?
Oh, yeah. It took about 11.
So what it's doing is scanning the disks, and it's looking for intact files or even partially intact files, things that look like files, and trying to reassemble them. And the way a file on a spinning drive, the way they write them out is they kind of daisy chain one to the other. So it's like a linked list of sectors. So they can walk down that list and slowly assemble all the sectors, even though they're in different parts of the drive. Files are very rarely all on the same, you know, together one after another. So they go and they put the chain together. They get to the end of it. Maybe they didn't get enough to make that file work. Maybe they did. Maybe the backup file, which has a weird name, they got all the sectors on that one, so that's why you can open that one. This sounds like kind of a classic, just a failed hard drive. Not a hardware failure, but more like a software failure.
Right. And a reminder to all your listeners, backup weekly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you
yeah.
have to deal with it.
Yeah. You know, the people who back up are people who've gone through this once before, Michael, and then, you know, you never forget. Yeah. I'm sorry. You could go to one of these companies. They're very expensive. They're not hugely expensive to look at it. They might have better tools. I don't know of something better than Recover. Let me ask people to take a look. The chat room is saying, and sometimes this will help, SpinRite. Which is my friend Steve Gibson's tool. It's a little expensive. It's $90. What SpinRite does is perhaps just what you need. See, there's different ways hard drives can fail. And what SpinRite is aimed at is a particular kind of failure where sectors cannot be readily read. The operating system will try to read a weakly written sector. And after a certain number of reads, it'll give up. Usually that's what happens on old drives. The magnetic signal gets weaker and weaker, and the operating system says, I don't know, I can't read this. That file's gone. What SpinRite does is it overrules the operating system. It doesn't even use the operating system. It uses the BIOS INT13 interrupt to just keep reading. It's dogged. It keeps trying. And that one time the sector gets read and it goes, I got it. It moves that data to some another sector, marks that sector damaged. And sometimes, not always, sometimes at $90, you know, might be worth it to you. After running out on the drive, and sometimes it'll run for days, weeks. I've heard it for running for months because it doesn't give up. It goes, come on, I know you're there, come on. If it finally gets that sector, it can sometimes reassemble a drive. What you really want it to do is to reassemble the file allocation table, the catalog, because then you'll have folders, you'll have organization. And it is very possible, this is the kind of the classic SpinRite case, this is a pretty old drive that just got weaker. You know, the magnetic data was written years ago, and it weakened and weakened and weakened to the point where the operating system said, I can't read this. But SpinRite might, because it's completely dogged, it might be able to get it back.
Yeah, it's an 8-year-old drive. I'm looking at the date on it now.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about when they fail. GRC.com, it's $90. You know, I can't promise it'll work. Generally, what you want to do is run it first, see if how much you can get back, and then you might want to run Recova afterwards, because Recova may now have more sectors to get back some of those critical files.
Got it. All right, Leo.
Give it a try. Yeah. It's bit rot. That's what it is. It's bit rot. So all of these tools are specific to a certain kind of damage. And so the first thing you kind of have to know is, well, what's wrong? Is the drive making a grinding sound and it doesn't show up? That's a hardware problem. That's bad bearings. Then you go to Drive Savers and they put in new bearings, they reassemble the drive, and it's good to go. Is it kind of really, really, really slow? This is usually the first warning sign that a drive is failing. And the reason it's your whole machine has suddenly slowed down, it's the number one reason machines slow down, is that little bit where the operating system says, well, I didn't get that. What? 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 And it might do that 100 times. What? Until it finally gets the data and then goes on. If it does that enough, your machine's going to be really slow. And at some point, all operating systems, they call it timeout. They give up. Timeout, I give up. Not going to read that one. Let's go to the next one. And that's when you get errors, crashing systems, can't boot, can't read the file. SpinRite, by going and just saying, no, I don't know. I am not going to accept that as an answer. I am not going to accept that. It says, I want it. I want that data. And it's going to keep trying, and it's not going to give up. And the only way it can do that, honestly, is by really, not the operating system, because the operating system is going to give up, by really using the lowest level hardware. It used to require BIOS. That's why Steve's rewriting the whole thing, because it was using a BIOS interrupt 13, which is the disk read interrupt, and it was just saying, give it to me, until finally, you know, okay, here's your data. Thank you. But as I said, that can take a long time depending on how hard to get your data is. So it's worth it. You know, it is worth it. If it's something, and $90, you know, you'll use it again and again. It's a lifetime license. There's no, you know, repeating fee. So I think it's probably worth it. GRC.com. It's called SpinRite. It's for a unique situation, but this sounds like that particular unique situation. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. This would be a good time, Leo, for you to mention our fine sponsors today. LinkedIn Learning. You got some time at home. Maybe now would be a good time to expand your skills a little bit with LinkedIn Learning. I've been a happy LinkedIn Learning customer for many, many years. I've talked about all of my friends, some of the best photographers, Photoshop experts, and many other areas, computer experts who teach at LinkedIn Learning. And it's grown a lot since we talked about it last. 16,000 courses. It's not just, by the way, it's not just geeky stuff. They've got amazing free courses. How about 10 ways to stay motivated while job hunting? You know what? I got to remind. Reminds me. I mean to send that to my daughter. My kids just graduated from college, right? They're job hunting. It's tough right now, but 10 ways to stay motivated. If you're interested in networking, digital network strategies, You want to know more about marketing? LinkedIn Learning has the best marketing courses. There's even a free course called Managing in Difficult Times. I need to take that one. You'll receive custom-tailored course recommendations with your LinkedIn Learning membership. Each lesson, they really do it beautifully. They use project files and quizzes. It's not just sitting there watching a video. You're really interacting with the instructors. And man, do they have the best instructors. People are really experts in their field. And I love LinkedIn Learning because those courses are available whenever I have time, on a computer, on my phone. You get a certificate when you complete the course so you can show people you're learning. Put it on your LinkedIn account. That's what I do. Get LinkedIn Learning for yourself or get it for your team. It's a faster way to learn and apply new skills to grow your business. Now is a good time. Team's at home. Team doesn't have as much to do. Maybe you're at home, don't have as much to do. LinkedIn Learning can help you learn from expert instructors, connect with a global network work of experience all in your own time. So keep learning the skills you need to rise to any moment, even a tough moment like this. You'll get 1 month free if you go right now to linkedinlearning.com/techguy. 1 month free. Get learning. Perfect time to do this. I've got to send this to Abby. linkedinlearning.com/techguy. Thank you, LinkedIn. Yeah, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Johnny Jett, our travel guru, coming up. We can still dream. We can still talk about travel, even if we can't do it. Bill in San Diego's next. Hey, Bill.
Hello, Leo.
How are you today, sir?
Hey, it's a beautiful day, except for the quarantine.
Well, you know, I know what you mean. It's kind of weird to look out the window and everything looks so nice and peaceful and beautiful and the sun is shining. The birds are singing. It's like, don't they know?
Man.
Don't they know? But it's, you know, enjoy the weather. You're living in a beautiful area.
Yeah, San Diego's nice. And I'm listening on the incredible KFI, which is just the most unbelievable radio station.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Thank you, KFI, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of Southern California.
It really is. You can hear them everywhere.
I know.
Here's my situation.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago on a Friday night, I looked at my cable bill, and it's my Cox Communications bill, and it's higher than I think it should be. So it's after hours, and I thought I'd just go ahead and use their chat feature.
Ah.
So it's a little message thing, window that opens up, and you...
Is it actually on the cable box?
No, it's actually... you have to actually go online.
It's on their website. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of encourage you to do that.
Sure, so they do. It's cheaper because you won't notice that the person is not in the United States.
Yeah.
Which is why, by the way, while they're there in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they work round the clock.
I chat with somebody and tell them, hey, my bill's a little high, and then they send me to somebody else. And the second person I chatted with says, hi, this is S-H-A-D-A-E. S-H-A-D-A-E. And that should have been a clue, but I'll continue. So we figure out what the problem was with the bill, and then this person says, hey, give me another minute, and I'll look further into your bill and see if I could save you some money or something like that.
Nice.
I said, yeah, sure. So about a minute, maybe a minute and a half later, kind of a long time, they come back to the chat and offer me faster internet for $14 additional a month. When I chat back, I don't need that, but thanks anyway. Then we wrap things up.
Yeah.
So a couple hours later, maybe an hour and a half later, I getting ready for bed, and I decide I'm going to check my email, but I can't get through. I can't log in. It won't let me log in.
Uh-oh.
So I thought, well, that happens sometimes. I'll just check it in the morning. So the next morning, I check it. Can't get in. Can't get in on my phone. Can't get in on the computer. So I actually call Cox on the phone and talk to somebody, and the only way they can get me in is if they reset my password for me. And I said, well, okay, we'll have to do it. So I got a new password and then was able to check my email. So I checked the emails that I missed from the previous night, and I find out that right during the time I was talking to SHADAE, who mentioned that they were in Jamaica, by the way.
Okay.
I find out that I got in my email notice that they had received a request to change my password.
Oh, ow.
And then about 8 minutes later, there's another email that says password request completed.
You got hacked.
Yeah, and the only person who could be in there was this person that I was chatting with.
Wow, I would report that to Cox.
Why?
That's not good. We're going to take a break. Johnny Jett coming up. Stay on the line, though. I want to talk to you some more about this. Wow, that's... So what did Cox say about it?
So I sent two emails, one to something like security.cox.com or something, and then I sent another one to abuse.cox.com. Those were the places that showed up as far as...
Because they would want to know this, because it sounds like there was no interruption in your chat. So sounds like it's an employee doing this.
Exactly. And so I didn't get good response from those two. I got a message back from the abuse.cox.com that my email had been received. So I called Cox and I talked to a person, and then they escalated me to another person who deals with security situations like this. And that guy apologized and said, "Hey, we'll be back with you in the near future to follow up on this." And I said, "Good." Well, that was 2 weeks ago, and I haven't heard from them.
Yeah.
Can somebody get my password and download all my emails?
Sure. You change the password back, though, so they no longer have access to it. But in the interim, during the time that they had access, yes.
This was about 12 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, they could have downloaded the entire set of them. Sure, anything you could do, they could do.
Oh, man. So what would be a logical next step? I'm going to have to send Cox maybe a certified mail letter saying, "Hey, you need to get back to me." And
I'd be really curious. So you're sure you were on the official Cox site, right?
Yes.
Because that would be question number one. You didn't, you didn't accidentally go to a, sometimes if you Google something, you get the wrong thing. But you were on whatever it was, Cox.net, or you're pretty sure of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy that I talked to, the security guy that I talked to, said, and I mentioned to him that this person said that they were in Jamaica. And he says, "Yes, we have people in Jamaica."
Yeah. Well, they have rogue employees in Jamaica is what they have. Did you give them your password?
No, but apparently all they have to do is ask the system to generate a new password.
And that's how we know. So that's how we know that it wasn't a bogus site. If it had been a bogus site, they would have asked, "Okay, we need to verify it's you. I need your password." But that didn't happen. They generated a new password without telling you.
Exactly.
And effectively locked you out. And then Shadea wrote down the password and gave it to an accomplice, and she said, "Hey, you're in."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So the thing that kind of spooks me is I have a DJ business where I DJ for parties and weddings, and I was doing something last year on the Navy base, and they asked for all this information, like my passport number.
Yeah. That's in there. The other thing to worry about, one of the reasons they want your email is because many other accounts use email to reset passwords. So you want to now go to any account that used that email as a password reset, which is probably all of them.
Oh, no. You're right. Oh, no.
Yeah. And if they're smart, they deleted the email, so you can't go in and see if they did that, as they got those reset emails. So I'd go to start with your bank, credit cards.
Right.
That's probably even more important, to be honest with you.
So when I when I go to the bank,
go change all your passwords. Basically, they can't do it anymore because they no longer have access to your email. The risk is in that 12-hour period that they went to your bank and said, "I forgot my password. Can I reset it?" So you'll know because your passwords will have changed. So you got to just check all of them. And it wouldn't be a bad idea to go and change all your passwords in case. Sometimes people send out passwords, which is bad. Hey, I have to run, but I'm sorry that happened to you.
Hey, man, thank you for the advice.
That stinks. Yeah.
Well, looky here. He's back from his travels all over the world. He's been to Borneo. He's been to Madagascar. He's been to Hong Kong and China. No, he hasn't been anywhere. He's been sitting in his basement.
I've been to Trader Joe's.
He's been to Trader Joe's. You know what? That feels pretty exotic these days. That's like, wow. Does. That's world travel, man.
For sure.
Did you get some of those Brazil nuts? Man, that's world travel.
Well, you know what? Travel is actually taken up a little bit, which is to my surprise.
I see that. In fact, we have somebody in the chat room who has a cruise scheduled, and I think it's early July, to Alaska.
Not going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen?
Not a chance.
They haven't contacted him yet to refund the money.
No, I'm not even sure Alaska is accepting all them the cruises right
too,
now.
Right? You can't get off the boat.
And I think there's a no sale order to July 31st, so it's not going to happen.
Okay.
And I think that's going to be extended, by the way.
It's just devastating. I just saw Air Canada laying off 50% of their workforce. They still have to fly these flights empty.
They do. I'm in a big beef with Air Canada right now. I had a flight scheduled for this week to fly from Toronto to New York, and they canceled the flight, and they won't give me my money back or anyone else's money back.
How can they not give you your money back?
They're saying, you know what? Sorry. Even though the DOT requires, no matter what airline, foreign, domestic, and they fly to, from, or within the United States, you have to give a refund within 7 days. And United was one of them that was not doing it. JetBlue at first. And so the DOT actually this week, again, the second time, the first one was April 3rd, they had to resend out an order saying, listen, you guys need to refund these monies to people. And Air Canada is still not doing it. They're offering vouchers. But, you know, who knows who's going to be flying again anytime soon? I mean, the airlines now are requiring people to wear masks. I had two friends fly this week. One flew from San Francisco to Sydney and one flew to New York. And the flight to New York, she said they weren't even wearing masks. Some of them weren't, you know, they would take their masks off.
It seems like the minimum to ask of people, just wear a mask. It makes a big difference from everything I've seen anyway.
For sure. And I think, and now they're talking about this week, they just came out saying that TSA is now considering taking everyone's temperature before you pass through.
And I don't know why they wouldn't. I know they're doing that in Hong Kong. In fact, they're doing testing in Hong Kong. You get off the plane, and I saw a picture. You saw that picture of people waiting in the airport. You have to wait 8 hours while the test results come back. And even then, do they quarantine? I think they still quarantine for 14 days. You go to your hotel, and they give you it's like Hotel California. They give you a card to let you in but won't let you out.
Well, they put a tracking device on you. They put a tracking a wristband on you, and then they make you download an app. They make sure that your phone number is correct. You know, Hawaii is the same way. Hawaii, they don't put a tracking device on you, but Hawaii, when you land, they ask you for your phone number. They call that number. They ask you where you're staying. They call the place where you're supposed to be staying. They check on you.
And they're serious. They just arrested a New York tourist for violating
the... He's a fool.
Yeah.
He's posting pictures on social media.
Yeah. Dummy.
But, I mean, times are changing.
He's 23. 23-year-olds just don't... They don't know any better.
But they're going to start making everyone download a tracing app. And I don't know what your feelings are about that, by the way.
Who's doing that? Hawaii is going to do that?
No. Right now, Hong Kong, Singapore, the European Union is considering it. They're trying to figure out how it's going to work when they, you know, go beyond borders. But everyone's going to have to download a tracing app to make sure that, you know, if you've been within, I guess, 6 feet or in contact with someone, they'll let you know.
Well, you know, Hong Kong's done a pretty good job of it. South Korea's done a pretty good job of it.
New Zealand's done an amazing job.
New Zealand.
Iceland. Iceland's going to be the hot spot right now for travel. They're opening up June 15th. A lot of people are talking about going there.
There are zero cases in Iceland right now.
And they will test you upon arrival, or you can do a 14-day...
It helps to be an island.
Yeah.
You can kind of control egress and ingress.
Yeah, I think that's the only way you're going to keep it out.
I see, though, somebody saying in the chat room that Italy's now open for business. I'm not sure I'd want to go to Italy right now. I love Italy. I love Italians.
Yes, Sicily's even paying for half your ticket if you would go. There's cases of that. But you know, I'm not comfortable going to Italy right now, and I'm part Italian. But you know what's going to be big this year?
What?
Is RVs. So,
but now I know a number of people who are living in RVs who are struggling a little bit because the RV parks have been closed. So they'll reopen though, right now, and you can,
because they will be limited. I think getting
RVs
a reservation,
are not meant to be lived in without plugging in somewhere.
That is true. So I think getting a reservation is going to be tough at these national parks.
Right.
You know, the parks are, a lot of them are closed. They're always changing. And but camping is going to be huge. And by the way, I'd like to give a shout out to my cousin who's just started a camping website, blog. It's called einerscampingtrips.com. It's really basic website, but he has really good information. The guy's been camping all of his life. And he's,
that seems like that would be safe, right? As long as you're not, you know, camping right next to somebody else.
Yeah, with, for sure. I mean, that's the whole thing. And I think that's what people want. They've been indoors. They want to go outdoors. They want to be away from people.
Yeah, exactly.
So camping
the
and
RVs. The last thing I want to do is go to Vegas and sit with a bunch of people at a in an inside at a craps table. The first thing I'd like to do is go outside and be enjoy the nature far away from other people. That sounds safe.
And that's the trend right now.
That's what we're going to do this summer. And we're all going to do it, which
means
the national parks will be jammed.
Well, yeah, and the national parks, some of them don't even want you to go.
Yeah.
And a lot of the park rangers don't want you to go because they're then put at risk. Though, I mean, you want to be outdoors. The beaches in L.A. just opened up this week. You have to be active. You can't put a towel down or an umbrella.
That's fine, though. We need exercise. We need fresh air. The evidence is, as long as you're wearing a mask and you keep moving and you keep social distancing, being outside is okay, right?
You want to be outside.
Just don't breathe on me, bro.
But you still need to wear a mask even at the beach in L.A., just not while you're swimming.
Oh, yeah, it's probably not good to wear while swimming. That'd be kind of like waterboarding yourself. Not a good idea. Not a good idea. Yeah.
No, but there are some good websites, by the way. I don't know if we have time to talk about, you know, different RV websites.
Yes, go ahead.
Where you can rent them. Cruise America is probably the most popular.
You see those all over the place, yeah.
Yeah, there's El Monte.
So they're
RV.
Back open. They're doing it.
Yeah, I just priced them out for California for the week of June 2nd or the first week of June. Some of them are as low as like $60 a night.
Are you going to take your little family out in a truck camper and see the world?
You know what? I've always said that, you know, when I'm young, I want to see all the international countries. And when I'm older, I want to drive around America. I've never been to the Grand Canyon. I've flown over it hundreds of times. I'd never been to Yosemite.
Oh, you got to go, man. It's beautiful.
So, you know, I've always dreamt about doing this. I just don't know if I'm ready yet, but I'm getting close.
So maybe Johnny Jet will be Johnny RV soon.
Well, listen, I still think people need to get out outside, but do it at a safe distance.
Oh, yeah,
I just don't know about
fever.
Plane travel.
We gotta get out of get a little distance between each other. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Grand Canyon's probably big enough. I think you'd be all right there.
Yeah, as long
stay
I mean,
off the
and
donkeys.
You need to make reservations.
Do you? Yeah, yeah. Even now. Probably
and that's
more
recreation.gov, by the way, for if you want to make reservations at different parks.
Recreation.gov.
And also the National Park Service is nps.gov, which is an important website
this
for anyone.
This is exciting. We're traveling again.
People are. I mean, 240,000 people passed through on Thursday. 3 weeks before that was 95,000 people passed through TSA checkpoints
that's
around the country.
Almost tripled. Johnny Jet, johnnyjet.com, on the Twitter, at Johnny Jet. He'll put all the links up there and on Instagram, too. And soon you'll see him waving at you from the back of an RV, traveling
I'll
down
the front.
Road. Okay. See you, Johnny. Yeah, you'll be in the front. Not gonna let Natalie drive it.
Yes. So.
Yeah, I'm going to stay home. Sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Now that should be Johnny Jet's theme. That's a good theme. Born to Run. That's our man, Johnny Jet. By the way, he does a really good YouTube channel, youtube.com/Johnny Jet, in which he asks travel folk 39 questions. I was the subject a few weeks ago. But he has now talked to so many big name travel folks. I mean, he's really rocking it. I think he's doing several a week now. So Rudy Maxa, and I mean, just it's really cool. Josh Gates, the points guy. So lots of good stuff at his YouTube channel. I forgot to give him. I want to give him a plug for that. YouTube.com/JohnnyJet. Back to the phones. We go. Bernie on the line from Lakewood, Colorado. Hello, Bernie.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, I've got a question concerning an adapter that I would like to find. It's the ATEM Mini video switcher that I've got on order.
Love it.
Yep, I don't know when I'll get it.
Yeah, I did leap of faith too. I just ordered it, and it took a couple of maybe a month. But it's so nice if you want to do video switching. What are you doing with it?
I want to play with it to do video switching and just learn all that stuff.
Yeah. You can do a little mini TV show. It's made by a company called Blackmagic Design, ATEM Mini, $300. It lets you do four HDMI inputs, so four different cameras, or it could be one of them could be from a computer, or more of them could be a computer. It has an output that makes it look like a webcam, a USB webcam, so you plug that into your computer. Suddenly, you've got the best Zoom in town, baby.
Well, and therein lies the problem, the HDMI part. I guess what I'm looking for is something that gets me from a USB webcam to HDMI.
Yeah, because it's really designed for, in fact, what I use with it is my cameras, my DSLRs or your point-and-shoot cameras. Many of them now have HDMI out.
Yeah, that's what I'll be using also. So I've got a Nikon camera, D3100.
Perfect.
Would be okay.
Perfect.
I've got a Canon camcorder. That one's okay.
Yeah, they'll look good, too, because they've got good lenses and all that. The webcam output's USB, and it's kind of in reverse, because that's what the ATEM does, is take an HDMI signal and convert it to USB. It is the converter box. So you want something that goes USB to HDMI.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Everything else, everything that you see is in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So there is someone, I forgot what the name of the company was, but they have one that's about $170, and it seems to have an awful lot of lag. And so I was just kind of curious to see if anybody there can come up with something less expensive and works better.
Yeah, I haven't used any of these. The idea is that they've got to take the USB, and the USB port is going to be outputting H.264 probably. That's the format it's going to output.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to convert it. The reason they're a little expensive, it's not just changing the pins. You have to convert it into a format, the HDMI format.
Mm-hmm.
Scooter X has found an article at the AV forums, which is a really good place for this. A lot of AV folks. Connect your webcam through HDMI input that talks about some of these devices. I'm looking at, I don't have any experience, so I can't tell you if there's lag or not. The lag would be because of the conversion, right?
Yeah.
But I see the Cable Matters, which makes pretty good stuff, has a super speed USB 3. And that's not going to work for your camera, though. So a lot of these are intended to plug into a computer. The computer treats the USB port as another monitor, and then you plug the other end into your TV. And that's probably not going to do what you want it to do. I'm going to go to the show notes, techguylabs.com. James will put this link up, take him a second or two, to the AV forums post, because somebody wants to do pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to be tricky, because some of these don't work with the ATEM. So you're going to have to get, I think a lot of them are really designed to hook a TV up to your laptop via USB port, and that's not what you want.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking is Raspberry Pi.
That has HDMI out, so that would be
And USB.
And USB in, you're right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's only $35.
Yeah, if somebody can do the software.
Think about that, yeah. So You'd connect the camera. In fact, they sell a very nice camera now for the Raspberry Pi via the USB port. That becomes a webcam. Now you're going to have a program running on Raspbian or whatever the operating system is that will see that, pick it up, and what you want it to do is output it to the HDMI port. I don't think, I bet you that there that it, such a thing exists. You know, there are a number of programs in Raspbian is basically Debian Linux. There's a program called Cheese that is basically for Linux a it's kind of the equivalent of that Apple program that lets you do, you know, funny pictures of yourself. That comes with most distros of Linux. I'm sure it comes with Raspbian, and if not, you could download it and install it. It's a webcam app, so it would take the webcam, and then you just go full screen with it, plug in the eye. I bet that would work. That's actually very clever. That's a very clever idea. I don't know how much lag there'd be.
Yeah, I don't mind a little lag, but this product that someone else has, it looks like it has a 1 second lag or 2 second lag.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really too much. Well, this is going to be fun. Are you going to be like the king of Zooms? You're going to be on there, and you're going to have a two shot. You're going to have a wide shot. You're going to say, let me just show you my computer screen. Let me just show you. I've got a close-up of my phone. You could do all sorts of. You could have a little TV show in there. I'm actually doing something similar at home because as a backup studio for our studio here, you know, we do a lot of podcasts. We do video with all our podcasts. I want to have a backup studio in my house. I've got three Sony Alpha cameras. They all give me what you'll need is clean HDMI out, so you don't get any of the, you know, the stuff that you see in the viewfinder. You also need, and I bought these little battery adapters, so you can plug them in so they can continue to power. You don't have to run off battery, and of course you need live HDMI. But most cameras nowadays, I'm sure your Nikon will do that, will have live HDMI out, and then you could just treat it like a studio camera. Yeah. Honestly, that's a pretty nice setup.
Yeah, that's, well, like I say, I'm going to be playing with it once I get the ATEM Mini. And
perfect.
So I'm just gathering a cable.
Yes, got to get it all together. Yeah, I have to get a bunch of micro HDMI. That's what the cameras have out to full-size HDMI. That's what the ATEM wants.
Not micro, but mini.
Mini or whatever it is. Yeah, there's mini and there's micro.
Yeah, for mine, it's the mini.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the output? Does it look good?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So I think I like your idea of a Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
I have one at home. I'll give it a try just to see if that could work. That would be kind of a cool way to get a webcam on. Now remember, webcams aren't going to be as good as your Nikon or as your camcorder,
right.
but it's another camera.
They could be the wide angle view.
Sure. The big problem, and I don't think it's a problem for most streaming, but every camera has a different look, different color, you know, slightly different, and so getting them to match, it'll look like you have kind of three different cameras. You can tune them, maybe get them to match, but you'll have to spend some time doing that. That's why I'm using all the same Sony Alpha cameras, because they'll all have roughly the same look. In a studio, that's a problem. You generally want to have all the cameras be the same so that the color and the output is similar, so that they look like they match. Otherwise, when you switch shots, people go, why he got so blue? Oh, now he's yellow. Oh, now he's blue. Oh, now he's yellow. Oh, now he's blue. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. They bring it all to you, including the studio, the LastPass. I'm coming to you from the Twit LastPass studios. And with so many of us now working from home, LastPass is pretty darn important. I hope you saw our LastPass event we did on Thursday. It was so much fun. Steve Gibson, Andrew Keen, LogMeIn's CISO, Chief Information Security Officer Gerald Buchelt. Really great conversation about identity in the age of COVID, about authentication, about what futures are going to look like. We talked about online voting and a whole bunch of other stuff. That's available at twit.tv/events. It was a really great event. So thank you. I really appreciate LastPass for making that possible. And I really appreciate LastPass because it keeps our business running safe and smooth, even with most of our employees at home. You got to always have a plan for the unexpected. We've learned that here. you know, after the fires 2 years ago, then last year, after this COVID crisis, we have learned to expect the unexpected. I love LastPass because it can be deployed quickly in the midst of any event to make sure your business keeps running smoothly, that every login is secure. Don't let your guard down when crisis hits. I love single sign-on. That's one of the things LastPass does so well. It manages employee access in a centralized view. IT always can see who has access to what from where. And by the way, a lot of times extra security is onerous. It's hard on the employees, not single sign-on. They love it. It's easier for them. Of course, LastPass made its name with enterprise password management, and they still have the best password management in the world. It's what I use. The oversight of shadow IT, enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. And because they've added multi-factor authentication, if they're using VPNs, you can make VPNs even more secure. You can make sure that a user's identity is proven using biometric and contextual factors. That makes it easier, again, for the employees and more secure for you. LastPass never sends or stores the master password. If LastPass can't access your data, you know the hackers can't either. Encryption is exclusively at the device level before it syncs to LastPass, so only you can get to your data. That's why I use LastPass as a secure store for everything, not just passwords, passports, driver's license, socials, everything. And it's AES 256, the strongest encryption you can get. Same kind used by the military, by banks. Your stuff is safe. And it's still seamless for your employees. That's why we use it at business, too. I use it at home. I use it at work. We even give LastPass accounts to all our employees because we want them to use it everywhere. And by the way, employees share passwords, but LastPass makes it possible for them to do it securely, which is really important. LastPass can help make remote work simple and can make it secure, and they're there for you with great support all the time. LastPass.com/twit. Find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter what happens. LastPass.com/twit. Thank you so much, LastPass, for all the support at Twit. LastPass.com/twit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. 888-827-5536. We have a website, too. That website is techguylabs.com. It's free, no sign up. It's where everything I talk about will show up. Techguylabs.com. So my iPhone, my big expensive iPhone 11 Pro Max died. I'm sending it to Apple for repair. Fortunately, I happen to have an iPhone SE. Folks at Mint Mobile had sent me one to use with Mint Mobile. So I had, you know, had this in my pocket. And I thought, well, this is a good chance for me to try the least expensive iPhone. Apple just came out with this. $400. This is the $400 model, 64 gigs of storage. It's got the guts of a modern iPhone 11. So it's very fast. Camera's not quite so fancy, but still pretty darn good. It's 12-megapixel camera using the same software Apple has in its big boy phones. So I get good pictures with it. I'm very happy with the picture. I just don't have the wide angle and the zoom and all that. I just have one lens. That's fine. Screen is a little smaller, 4.7 inches, and I'm a little spoiled by that. I like a big screen. I really do. But this is more pocketable. It's easier to hold in the hand. You can easier to operate with a single hand. Put all my apps on here. I obviously, with 64 gigs, was a little bit more careful about putting a lot of music or pictures or so forth. But even with the apps that I use day-to-day on here, so a little bit of music, some pictures, I only used about half of the total storage. So I think 64 is, for most people, and I've had, this has been my experience in the past, is probably enough. When you have more, you use it up, but you don't have to have more than 64 gigs. I think for $400, this is a nice phone, and you know, there's an extra benefit. My iPhone 11, I couldn't unlock it when I was wearing a mask because it uses Face ID. I always had to type in the long password to get into it. This phone doesn't have the tiny little bezels and the giant screen, but it does have a fingerprint reader, Touch ID. So this is, in a way, the perfect quarantine phone because it works perfectly with a face mask. If we get an infection where we have to wear rubber gloves, I might have to do something else. But for right now, this is a really nice little phone. So I had heard very good things about the iPhone SE, this newest iPhone that Apple released last month, from a lot of people. I hadn't really spent a lot of time with it because I like a bigger phone. But I'm very happy with it. This is not a bad phone at all, and I would highly recommend it. That's what most of the reviewers also said. That, you know, why spend? I spent $1,200 on that top of the line iPhone 11 Pro Max. $1,200. I could get three of these phones for that price. It makes you really wonder. I like this iPhone SE. So if you've been thinking about getting a new phone, I know a lot of people like Android phones. They're less expensive. And I do love Android phones, but I have to say I have deep concerns about this long-term security of them, the number, you know, the how long the updates will be good for and so forth. An iPhone for most people is probably the right choice. And at $400, I think it's a very, very good choice, the iPhone SE. So I'm happy to say, now that it's my daily driver, I'm very happy with it. Don't know what happened with my iPhone 11. The video just started glitching and weird and stuff, and so I'm sending it back to Apple. I'm sure they'll fix it. It's fairly recent. I'll keep you posted on that one. I talked to him last week, but old chef guy from Agua Caliente is back. Hi, old chef guy.
Greetings.
Greetings and salutations.
I was listening to you talk last week about Zoom fatigue.
Oh, man. Do you have it?
And do you... I have bad words. Really strongly bad words.
You know, it's funny because I spend most of my work day on camera doing, you know, Zoom calls, basically. Many of our hosts, like Johnny Jett was just on, he's on Skype. And so that's what I do for a living, and I still have it when I go home. I don't want to do Zoom.
My query is, how much do you think that the bad audio quality contributes to that?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that could, you know, and it would.
Because you talk into a PR40 all day long, and Johnny Depp's talking in a microphone most of the time.
Right, good quality studio microphones, but most people are in their little headsets, or worse, they're using their laptop microphone. You hear all that room echo. You know, that definitely does, now that I think about it. In fact, when I do Zoom calls at home, I use a studio microphone. I have it hooked up to my computer with an adapter from Sound Design or Sound Devices, and it sounds very good. I'm wearing good quality in-ear headphones. So I, just out of habit and the fact that I have the equipment, do have good Zoom quality audio, but very few of the people I'm talking to do. Almost all of them are using their laptop microphone. That's the worst.
My favorite is, I actually, we've never talked about this, post-chef life, I went back to my nerd world, and I produce online events for people. But it's only audio. I don't care about video.
Good.
I don't need to watch you talk. As cute as you are, I don't need to watch you talk.
It's the words that matter, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I'm, because of it, I blame this on you, I have a PR40 right here. I have an Audient 14 as my interface.
Nice.
So I'm like you. When I'm set up on a webinar, I sound kind of like you. I mean, is...
Yeah, no, that, and that, I think you nailed it, actually. I hadn't really thought about that. I thought it was looking at the grid of people, you know, and the you know, am I muted? Can you mute? Please mute. You know, all of the little annoyances and hassles of a group video call, and certainly those add to it. But I bet you're right. I bet the biggest fatigue point is the audio.
Well, and I'm moving toward the question of, if I run one more seminar with a doctor whose doctors know everything, that is shouting at his computer from across the room.
Yeah, it's awful.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and you hear all this.
It's horrible.
I call it room tone, but it's this echoey room sound. It's terrible.
Many, many bad words.
Many bad words.
I won't use Giphy's anymore. Giphy's now.
Yiffy.
I just have to say, insert bad words of your choice here. And so my question is there a good, do you have a recommendation for a reasonably priced lab that could be recommended to people?
I wouldn't recommend a lab. What you really want to get people to use, if you can, and they're hard to get because everybody's trying to buy them, is a headset. So there's two problems that happen with video calling. One is people don't put on headphones, so the speakers from the computer are in the room. Now, Skype and other Zoom and other programs have pretty good technologies to echo cancel, but it's but it still takes a hit on the quality. So the number one thing to start with is get that doctor to wear some headphones, even if it's just his Apple earbuds. But you don't want to use the microphone on the earbuds. You want to use a better microphone. You want a headset. And so we use Plantronics headsets. In fact, we'll send them if we've got guests on our podcast and they propose. You'd be amazed how many technical people anyway these days have pretty good setups. Everybody's a podcaster now. So this we used to have to do this all the time. The problem is getting them. They're way delayed. But let me just see which Plantronics we normally
say, because I have several pairs of the old. I have a Plantronics so old you actually were able to plug it into your computer and attenuate the sound quality.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about the oh man, they're scalping on these. I'm not talking about the Plantronics that, you know, people used to use with their regular office phone system. I'm talking designed for computers with USB interfaces. And yeah, it looks like I could get one Monday on Amazon, $138. They're really overcharging for these. But yeah, there are some good Plantronics choices. They're headphones, plus they're a boom mic that comes fairly close to the mouth. You'll want to help the doctor not pop his peas or breathe into it by moving it up above his mouth or below his mouth. And that's the worst thing in a COVID crisis. You don't need that. But honestly, I think you can totally, I think you can 90% of the quality you're getting with a fancy microphone and a fancy converter, you can get with a $50 headset. And anybody who's spending a lot of time on Zoom calls, that will help with the fatigue as well, because you're not having to hold up something. You're hearing it better. Everybody else in the house isn't hearing the call because you're on headphones. There's just a lot of reasons to prefer it. And so we will send those out. We used to send them out all the time. I don't know what model. I see a Plantronics Blackwire Analog. The C225 is $40. I prefer to get the USB. Generally, you're going to get better sound from those, and that's going to add a little bit. These are 100. The CS540s, which I think are the ones we sent out, are $138. It's kind of pricey, but I think, you know, you tell the doctor, look, we want to have a good conference. We don't want to have people tuning out because they can't understand you. It's worth spending a little bit of money on this. James DeRuvo's got a link he's going to put in the show notes to the 478, which is another good model. And we've bought those as well before, James. Those are good. USB. I don't see a price on it. That's the only problem. This looks like it's from... it's used. No wonder. Yeah. Webcams and headsets flew off the shelves when this all started. I think they're going to get a little easier to get. I think manufacturers have ramped up production, and you should be able to get them. Very good point. Very good point, Chef Guy. That is a very good idea. You want to reduce Zoom fatigue. Get the audio going. One of our chatters is a Microsoft employee. He says he's got Teams fatigue. He says he's on Microsoft Teams because he's working from home. He also has, how many kids do you have, Lou? 5, 6, 7? He's got a lot of them. He says, I sometimes can't get up from my chair. I'm about to turn into a blob. Scheduling push-up blitzes now. All right. I'll do them with you, Lou. I'll do them with you, Lou. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's talk high tech. You and me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Let's go to line two, and Jerry, Denver, Colorado. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I sent you an email, I don't know, probably 6-8 weeks ago.
Did I respond? Probably not. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. That's okay.
I get a lot of email, and I miss a lot of it, so it's probably that I missed it. I'm sorry.
No, don't worry about that. Okay. I when going to the Tech Guy Labs page, it isn't real clear as to where to send the email to.
Well, that's why I don't publish an email address, to be honest with you, because I know I won't. It's futile. I feel bad about it, but it's really hard for me to. I get, as you might imagine, I get hundreds of people a day say, "Well, you know, just take a second. Can you tell me what to do about this?" And it's like, "Yeah, I don't have time."
No, I certainly understand. But I thought I had a few minutes a day since I'm sitting here at home doing nothing.
Call me. That's what I'm here for. Yeah,
exactly.
I got office hours, 6 hours a week.
Yep. Yeah. So the reason I was calling in and what the email was all about is I've been listening to you for quite a while, and you brought up something that I haven't heard you say, you know, in the long distance past. But recently, you're talking about the 3-2-1 backup strategy.
Yes, sir.
And I've been using Synology to back up all my computers, too, here at the house.
Yep.
And I said, well, you know, this thing iDrive he's been talking about, let me take and, you know, check into that. So I got an iDrive account, didn't use the, you know, the code word of Leo to get a special discount, so I'm just paying regular prices.
Darn it.
That's what I said.
Darn it. So this is the part. This is the whole thing of 3-2-1, and let me explain it, and also give credit to Peter Krogh, who's a great photographer, good dear friend, and as any photographer, especially wedding photographers, knows, you can't lose pictures. You can't call a bride and say, you know that wedding? Can we do that again? I can't. The shots are gone. You don't want to be that guy. So they're really precise about not losing stuff. And he came up with this great idea. You can find out. You can read about it at the website he did with the Library of Congress, dpbestflow.org, dpbestflow.org. But in a nutshell, three copies. That means if you delete the original, now you're down to two copies. So three copies, two different kinds of media. Don't rely too much on any one thing like a NAS or a USB thing or a cloud. But one should be cloud. That would be iDrive. Now, your Synology is perfect, and this is what I do. So I have a Synology that's a local, massive hard drive I can use for backup. And I do. I have it running in the background all the time, backing up. But then you can put iDrive on your Synology so that what's on the Synology is also in the cloud.
That was what I was going to ask you about, because I went ahead and mapped my Synology drives back to my main computer, and then I was using the regular iDrive MS type client to shove it up to iDrive.
Which is fine, too. It's fine, too.
Yeah, and it didn't work as nicely as I wanted it to. So I said, you know, and then after I pushed it, the several terabytes of stuff up to iDrive, I discovered the Synology client.
Right.
So I installed the Synology client, but instead of having to pay the huge penalty for uploading another few terabytes over Comcast, I went ahead and I asked them for their backup disk. They sent one to me.
Perfect.
Stuck it all on that. Now I'm fully automated.
Doesn't that feel good?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, the thing that if I would have known about the Synology client at the same time.
I should have told you about it. But, you know, honestly, they're an advertiser and they pay me to read their ad.
Gotcha.
So I don't want to like ad lib too much. Oh, and by the way, there's this and that. But the truth is, iDrive is pretty amazing. They do a lot of extra stuff. And I'm glad you asked and mentioned it, because people who do use Synology or iDrive should know about that, because it really is a great feature. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If we would just give them 5-minute ads, then I would have plenty of time.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's a nice. So it's working well for you?
Oh, it works amazing. I can't tell you how much more I'm learning about the Synology drive every time
I love my Synology.
Some of their other apps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I actually do, because I have, I use Synology not just for backup, but I use it for Plex. so I have movies and stuff on it. What I ended up doing is I have a Synology at home, and I have a duplicate Synology here. And Synology has a program called Hyper Backup that will keep the two in sync. So, my, in a way, my cloud, my big cloud backup, because I don't, I mean, I don't want to kind of store movies on iDrive. That's too much. But I don't even want to take the time to upload them. But my big backup is here at the office. So I, in effect, have a duplicate set of Synologies, one at home and one in the office. Unless Petaluma gets nuked, I think I'll be okay. Now, if Petaluma gets nuked, thank goodness there's iDrive.
I love that city.
Have you been here?
Yeah, I spent a vacation out there about 3 summers ago.
Well, I love Denver. My son went to CU Boulder. And,
very nice.
Yeah, I love the area. It's really pretty. And Boulder's so nice. Boulder feels like Petaluma to me. It's like I thought I was in California, which is probably why Henry went there.
The water, yeah. You're right.
Sometimes they call it UC Boulder, University of California at Boulder. There's so many California kids there.
Yes, sir.
Well, Jerry, I thank you because I'm glad to hear you're happy. I was hoping that all had worked out for you. So that's really good. It's cool that they make this. The iDrive guys are pretty impressive. It's the same people who do remote PC. I got them too. Yeah, they have really good coders, and they don't sit on their duff. They are always adding stuff, which is cool.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I use remote PC to take and manage my sister-in-law's PC remotely.
Bless you, Jerry. Our sponsors, thank you.
And this was not a sponsored call, but it certainly did start to sound like it, didn't it?
Well, yeah, and I hope I disclaimed that they are. I think I mentioned a couple of times they're a sponsor. But, in fact, I think you did, too. But, yeah, I mean, it's nice when we can have sponsors that fit our audience well. And those are two products that do. So I'm very happy that we have them. I feel fortunate because I can still eat. Not that I should be, but I can.
Yeah.
All right, Jerry. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. I am deep in a trance listening to that great music. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll tell you who did pass Fred Willard, the great comic actor. Man, I was such a fan. You might have seen him in some of those mockumentaries like Best in Show and A Mighty Wind. He was also in Spinal Tap, I think. Yeah. Did some Christopher Guest stuff. Really talented actor. I worked with him briefly. We wanted him to do a game show for us on Tech TV. I wish I could find the reels for those. Because we did a game show with Fred Willard, who's hysterical. And my favorite Fred Willard show, which I don't know if you can see it anymore, is the one he did with Martin Mull, Fernwood Tonight. Do you remember that? Whatever happened to that? Be fun to see that. Put that back up on Netflix. I'll have to see if I can find it. It was a mock, Tonight show with Martin Mull, who's very funny. And Fred Willard was the sidekick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Line one is another Coloradan, another Denverite. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, Fernwood Tonight was a great show. That was.
You remember that way back when?
Yep. Hey, you know your Apple iPhone is on a small boat to China.
Yeah, I wonder where it's going to get fixed.
I sent an iPad once. It took forever.
Oh, well, so I would normally bring it to the Apple store, but they're still not open. They are reopening next week, I think, slowly.
Anyway, my question is my PC is an HP Vista, and it's still running.
Okay.
Am I running on...
Yeah, you're running on fumes, my friend.
I know. I'm more than happy that it's running.
XP, well, here's the funny thing. And this is why it's a little frustrating for people who, you know, say, well, why can't you support it, Microsoft? It runs fine. In fact, if you took that PC and you took a clean copy of Vista and only installed the software that came out about that time, it would run exactly as if it was brand new. It wouldn't be any different because these things just don't wear out. The one part of that computer that may wear out is the spinning hard drive, but you could easily replace that for next to nothing.
Right. Well, mind because I just use it to search the internet.
Well, here's the problem. After 10 years, Microsoft ends support for versions of Windows. So XP died, then Vista died. Windows 7 recently went out of support just in January of this year. That means no versions of those operating systems are getting patches. Maybe you noticed that. You don't get your patches on Tuesday, well, second Tuesday of the month anymore.
I got Windows 10 on it now.
That one is safe. You're not running Vista anymore, though.
No.
Oh, you're fine. If it's running Windows 10, you're getting patched. The risk is running the Windows Vista because it's if there's a security flaw, and there are many, they won't get fixed, and so you might be at risk going out on the internet. But if you're running Windows 10, I get it. The machine was called the HP Vista. It wasn't running Vista. I apologize.
Well, see, I was going to go Apple, but I've had bad luck with Apple. I've had a MacBook and an iPad just die, and it was a programming issue.
You know, if you like... I'm not a fan of Windows. You've probably heard me say some bad things about Windows. But if you like Windows and it works for you, more power to you. You know how to use it. You know how to stay safe and stay secure. And it does the job. I would be the last person to say, oh, you shouldn't be using it. When I say don't get Windows, I'm telling new people, people who don't have computers yet, who don't have a preference, you'd be better off not getting Windows unless you have an IT department. But you've been using it for a long time, Bill. You know how it works. Clearly, you're able to stay safe with it. You haven't been bit by viruses. I'd say keep doing it. Keep your guard up. You got to be careful about, you know, links that you click, sites that you visit, programs that you run, because there are a lot of bad guys and they're always attacking Windows. But that's why you want to use the latest version of Windows, because Microsoft continues to update it, put out patches. Last patch Tuesday, they put out, actually, I guess it was in the April patch Tuesday, there were 113 fixes, most of them critical. That means there were 113 security flaws. Now, Apple does the same thing. I'm not saying Apple's flawless. Really, the problem and the reason I bash on Windows really applies to Apple, too, which is that these are general-purpose operating systems. And until recently, that's the only kind of computer you could get. A general operating system that could run any kind of software you wanted. The problem with that is in order to make an operating system, whether it's Mac OS or Windows, be able to do that, it has to be fairly complex, fairly big, fairly elaborate. The more complex software is, the riskier it is, the more likely there's security flaws. Plus, Windows has a big disadvantage. It's used by everybody. There are 1.5 billion current Windows installs out there. That means bad guys are going to be banging on Windows more than anywhere else because that's where the money is, right? That's the ripe prime territory. So they do bang on it. They do find flaws, and there's flaws fixed every single month in Windows, sometimes not fixed. Most people don't need a general purpose operating system, and thank goodness these days you don't have to get one. Now, I'm not telling you, Bill, you're happy. Stay with what you got. If that HP Vista is running, you're running a current version of the operating system, you're staying up to date, you're staying secure, you're comfortable with it, I wouldn't change a thing. You're fine. You're great. But if you're new to computing and you want to get a new computer, I think it'd be better to look at something like a Chromebook, which is much more secure, or an iPad, which is easier to use and much more secure. These are not general purpose operating systems. These are very much locked down. And as a result, they're safer. You can't maybe do as much. You know, there may be things you want to do that you can't do on a Chromebook or an iPad. Very commonly, video editors, filmmakers, they don't like to use those. If you're launching rocket ships, you're probably not doing it on a Chromebook. Even if you're a photographer, you may prefer, although I have to say the iPad Pro, the most modern, fanciest iPad, really is a great photography tool. More and more photographers, I think, are using it. But I'm not trying to talk you out of using something you've got. I do think it's important if you're using Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows 7, that you upgrade to Windows 10, and you should do that as soon as possible because you are at risk. You're running old versions of the operating systems that are not being fixed. That's dangerous. That means every time you go on the internet, that's dangerous. But your HP running modern software, as long as it runs fine, it's great. The only thing, as I said, that'll eventually wear out, that hard drive, put next time you buy a hard drive, put a solid state drive in there. It won't wear out, and it'll be 10 times faster, and you'll be happy, and you'll say, wow, it's like having a new computer. Because honestly, what really has also happened in the last 10 years is computers have gotten as fast as they need to be. In the early days, you sound like you've been around a little while, Bill. You know this. In the early days of computing, we were seeing every year big jumps in performance and capability, hard drive storage, memory, processor speeds, huge jumps for the first 20 years of the computer industry. But it's a mature industry now, and it's just not improving at any great rate. So that computer you bought 5 years ago is probably just as fast as a computer you'd buy tomorrow. You know, there's minor differences. And enthusiasts will say, oh, I love my 16-core Ryzen. Oh, boy. But you wouldn't notice a difference in most cases. The big change that has happened, and I think is worth looking at for people who are out to get a new computer, is mobile devices, is the smartphones. And the smartphone OS, which has migrated to the iPad, is a really great way to safely compute and do most of what people want to do, if not everything. Chromebook, on the other side, if you want a laptop or a desktop, is a very good choice as well. And if you're getting a new computer and you don't have a bias towards Mac or Windows, I think that's the way to go, frankly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Gizwiz coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, live from the Avalon Ballroom in beautiful New York, New York, I give you Disco Dickie D, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and our gizmo wizard, the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
How you doing?
New glasses. I like them.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
They've got that kind of horn rim look.
Yeah, they do.
Were they made out of a horn?
I wear them from time to time. They're a Warby Parker.
Oh, of course they are. They're gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
Contactless contacts. That's their specialty. Well, Dick joins us each week from his studio in beautiful downtown Gizneyland to share a gizmo or a gadget that he's been enamored of late. What have you fallen in love with lately?
Well, this is not coming till quarter three, which is like July, August. And you order things in advance.
I do. So you have to
go ahead.
You have to. These days, you can't get nothing on time.
Oh, okay. So have you ordered your safe spacer?
No. What is it? Oh, this is a great idea. Does it help you social distance?
Yes.
Get back.
No, you don't have to do that anymore. It'll either buzz
It makes an alarm?
Yes, it's an alarm. So this thing is very pricey, okay? So my guess is it's going to be more for commercial use. Like one of the uses they cited in the press release is that perhaps museums would hand you one as you leave.
It's a good idea.
As you come in.
Now, it looks like you could wear it around your neck or on as a wristwatch on a bracelet.
Yes, or you can put it in your pocket and set it for vibrate. But, Leo,
they call that fun mode, I think. Yeah.
Yes. Lonely fun mode.
Lonely fun mode, yes.
Right.
How does it know that you're nearby?
It is near-field communication.
Oh, ultra-wideband. Okay, all right.
It's a little weird because one part of the press release says 10 times more accurate than Bluetooth. And then in another part of the press release, a couple pages later, it says NFC, use with NFC or Bluetooth.
Well, it's the new kind of Bluetooth. And what's interesting is Apple has built this into their new phones as well. This is a UWB chip, and I would not be surprised. Now, the only way this safe spacer will work is with other people wearing it.
Yes, exactly. So you have to have a pair.
So if I just walk in without wearing one, it's not going to know I'm nearby. So the idea is it separates people by seeing. That's why it'd be good in a museum or a grocery store. As you go in the door, they'll put one on you or give you one, and then you have to wear it throughout the place. Yeah.
And they waterproof, so like on the way out, they could throw it into disinfect and get it ready for the
next
week.
I actually think this is a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah, right, so how much, price, though? You said pricey.
No, that's what I'm going to say. You're pretty good at this. I think you might be.
It shouldn't be more than $50.
Well, then you're not getting one.
How much?
100.
Oh, no, that's too much. For two? Yeah. Maybe you get two.
No, for one.
For one? Because you got to get one for everybody.
Volume discounts available.
Yeah, I hope.
So
I think, though, that you will see apps on the iPhone that will do this exact same thing.
I was going to say, if you're saying that chip is available, and I don't have an iPhone or anything.
Right now, Apple would have to do it because only Apple has access to that UWB chip. You know, that's how Apple works. They did the same thing with NFC. At first, only Apple could use the NFC chip. Then over time, they let other companies and other apps
use it. So then if you had two Apple phones that had this chip, you think they'll come up with an app that'll do exactly that?
Absolutely. It could actually be built into the operating system. I wouldn't be surprised at all. That's a really good idea. The problem is, of course, you have to have a late model iPhone.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. But you're not adding another
But who doesn't have a late model iPhone? Yes. Let's be honest.
Who doesn't have a shelf of every iPhone that was ever made?
Yeah. I think it's only in the iPhone 11. It's a chip. It's a U1 chip. It will be in all iPhones going forward, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is being done by 1K Multimedia. Do you know that company?
No.
They build a ton. They make speakers and microphones. Oh. They do a lot of stuff for musicians. So that's why I think it's not one of these things where it's a guy in a garage.
Good for a concert, right? A
good idea. Yeah.
It's just expensive. Yeah. But, of course, it's the first of these, and I bet you they could get the price down as they make more and more and more of them. It's a really good idea. It's a really, really good idea. And it's the technology Apple and Google are using in there. You know, they announced a couple of months ago that they were putting something into the new phones that would allow health authorities to put contact tracing apps in the phones. That's using that U1 chip, the UWB chip.
Okay.
It's an interesting, it's a completely legit technology, an interesting idea. I agree, it should be cheaper because ideally everybody should wear one, right? You should have it on your lapel. You shouldn't be allowed in to the grocery store unless you all have one. Yeah. And then that
unfortunately, it's not one of those things where you're going to say, well, I don't want to wait till July because by then this will all be over.
I'm not ordering one only because you need to have everybody wear them for it to do anything. Yes, it doesn't do anything unless everybody's wearing one. Yeah. Very interesting idea. How'd you learn about this?
They sent out this elaborate press release Thursday saying releasing this information today at noon. Hmm. And I thought, well, if Leo's not onto it, I'm glad you told me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Safe space.
They should send a card. You know those cards that have sounds when you open up and it should say, step back, step away, go away. That would be good. Just to that, you get your attention, wouldn't it?
That's a very funny idea.
Just do it yourself. You want to read more?
Safespacer.net.
Safespacer.net. You want to know more? Actually, forget that. Forget he even said that. Go to gizwiz.biz. That's his website. GIZWIZ.BIZ. Not only does it rhyme, but it's a great treasure trove of fun. If you click the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy, you'll see the Safe Spacer and everything else he's mentioned on our show. But you can also play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed Mad Magazine. If you can identify a close-up of a gizmo or gadget, trust me, it's not as easy as it looks. Because to me, it's pretty obviously a ducty quacker, but maybe that's just me. I mean, I just look at it and I go, yeah, you put that on the duck bill and you screw down the thing and then the duck can't quack anymore.
Wow.
It's a duck quacker.
I pray it's just you.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows that. It even comes in duck bill yellow. I don't know. But an autographed copy of Mad Magazine could be yours. He's given away 6 for the best right answer, 12 for the best wrong answers. Rules and information all available at gizwiz.biz. While you're there, pick up some GizWiz garbage or Mad Collectibles. And Dick played the match game with us a couple of weeks ago. It was so much fun. He's got original match game questions you can buy on the website, too, because he was the
And
the guy
everything
who wrote them.
Between now and June 15th goes to the Actus Fund. And so far have $500 to send
them. Oh, isn't that great? Isn't that great?
Yeah, you know, Broadway's not, now they posted a new date, nothing before September 9th or something.
And you can't all be wearing those bracelets in the show because then everybody have to get up and leave.
You know what, Leo? The Rockettes, when they're going to be 6 feet apart. They're going to be out 50th Street and 51st
like
Street.
Going down Broadway, kicking up a storm. I don't know who they're going to hold on to. I guess they could hold on to their pinkies.
Nobody.
September. I even think that might be a little optimistic, but we shall see. I do miss going to Broadway shows. I used to love to do that. Back in the day, before the Rona, Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
Don't forget his great podcast, gizwiz.tv. Have a great geek week. Didn't get to thank Lady Laura, the fabulous Kim Schaffer, all of you. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.